Everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Abnormal Psychologist Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Colby Taylor. I'm a psychologist in the state of Tennessee, and I'm an associate professor of behavioral sciences at Christian Brothers University. And I'm recording this episode. It is the end of July, so I am basking in the last of my summer break. I haven't really thought about, I'll be honest with you, I'm kind of a procrastinator, so I haven't put much thought into my fall semester yet. I don't think my classes start, and this is really bad that I don't have an exact start date, but until like the third week in August. And so until the calendar switches to August, I'm not really thinking about school that much. We did have a psychology camp, the first ever psychology camp we've ever had at Christian Brothers University last week. And we had some high schoolers come up to the university, and the professors put on some different seminars and lectures and stuff. We tried to make it interactive. And I thought that was super successful. I mentioned my podcast and the seminar that I developed. I'm just trying to bask in the summer. So high schoolers, I thought that was really successful. The psych camp, maybe we'll have another one next year. If you know anybody that's in high school, tell them to sign up next summer. We also have an undergrad student that's following me around with my clinical work at UT. And it seems like I was up there yesterday or the day before. I had like five or six students following me around. So it felt kind of cool, kind of intimidating to have a team behind me. Speaking of clinical work, I thought I would do something a little bit different with this episode because we're usually talking about like research-based topics, whatever. I thought I would share with you some of my experiences with animals over the years. So this episode is going to be dedicated to critters in my clinical work, which is something you might not think about when you think about psychology. I'll start off, occasionally in some episodes, you'll hear a dog barking in the background. I have two dogs right now. One is named Gertie. She's a rescue. And the other is named Shadow, who is also a rescue. But he's a rescue by way of my clinical work. And I'll explain exactly how Shadow and I came to be a pair over the next couple of minutes. And then we'll talk about mice and spiders and geckos. I've got a couple of gecko stories all related to clinical work. So this should be an exciting episode. Anyways, we'll get started with Shadow. So I did my postdoc back in 2016. And when I was doing my postdoc, I did it with a local school system here. And I was a psychologist that would travel around to different schools. And I noticed it seemed like every school had their own dog, just like a stray dog that would sort of show up at school, would maybe lay in front of the front entrance or come up to the back of the cafeteria and get fed scraps. Every school had a dog. And I got a call from one of my friends that was a psychologist at a different school. And she knew that my wife and I, Lauren, rescued dogs and fostered dogs. And I think during my postdoc year, we fostered over 30 dogs, which sounds like a lot, but a lot of times we had like litters of puppies. So we'd have like 8 or 9 puppies at a time. Now that we have kids, we haven't fostered as much lately. Maybe I'll get back in the foster game. But she said, hey, there's this dog that's been hanging outside of the school. We've called him Westy because I think it was like West Side School that she taught at. Can you come and get him? Because he's really sweet. I said, okay, I'll come and get him. I'll try to find him a home. We were going to like adoption events every weekend, Lauren and I, and we'd bring these dogs and we'd sit outside of a pet store with our adoption agency and hopefully get dogs adopted. And so we said, we'll try to do something for Shadow. Well, we didn't name him Shadow at the time. It was Westy at the time. So anyways, I go and I pick him up from the school, and immediately in my car, he starts throwing up everywhere, throws up on me, throws up all over the car, just vomit everywhere. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I can't believe I'm doing this. So I took him down to the vet. I say took him down. We lived in Mississippi at the time, and this dog was from Tennessee. So I drove him down to the vet and had him checked out. Said he was pretty healthy. He was probably about 11 months old. Just had car sickness. And it turns out when we got back to my house that night, he wouldn't let me leave my sight. I couldn't leave his sight. He was like my shadow. And so he's sort of a black lab mix. And between the black lab mix and the fact that he was trailing me around, I said, we're going to rename you Shadow instead of Westy or Westside or whatever, wherever he was from. He became like very needy and very attached to me. And I thought there's no way that I can adopt this dog out. And so Shadow became a foster failure. And he's probably 8 or 9 years old now. no, seven, eight, I don't even know, 2016, if he was 11 months old. I guess he'd be almost 8 years old. He's been hit by a car. When he came to us, he had this gnarly scar on his back. We don't have no idea how he got the scar, but he's just a really, really sweet dog that occasionally makes noise during my episode while I'm recording episodes. So maybe Shadow will make an appearance in the next 20 minutes or so. But I mentioned every school that I went to, every place just about had a dog. And once I was at a school and I was had a meeting with parents and school principal and everything, and I was supposed to present results from a psychological evaluation to these parents. There was a team of about 10 people that were there, and it was just like I couldn't rearrange this meeting. So I showed up to this meeting, but there was this dog out front of the school, and the dog looked really, really pitiful. He walked like three steps, and then he fell over onto his side. And I thought he died, but he was still breathing. And I was like, oh my goodness, this dog has been hit by a car and I've got to get into this meeting. I'm already a couple of minutes late. And like, there's no way I can sit out here and like attend to the medical needs of this dog. Although I have been late to meetings before, confession, like sometimes when I'm driving through Memphis, you know, I'll see a stray dog or something. I'll stop the car. I'll get the dog in the car. Obviously can't take the dog to the meeting or wherever I'm going, to my clinical work, to my classes I'm teaching. So I'd be worried the dog would bite somebody. I have no idea the history of the dog. I don't want to get sued for giving somebody rabies. So I usually have to bring the dog home. By the time I get home, there's usually fur and mud and sometimes vomit on me from the dogs. So I have missed meetings, class, whatever, for dogs before. But I was already at the school. They'd already seen me. There was no way I was going to be able to duck out of this meeting. So I was like, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? And having worked in sort of dog rescue before, I called up Street Dog of Memphis. And they do a lot of rescuing of street dogs in Memphis. And I said, hey, there's this dog. I think he's been hit by a car. He's in really sad shape. He's basically unconscious in the parking lot. Can you come? I got to go to this meeting. I'll tell you exactly where he is. I'll drop a pin on my phone. And they're like, yeah, no problem. We'll be there in like 10 minutes. So I went into the meeting and come out of the meeting. I get this phone call from Street Dog. And they're like, we couldn't find this dog. Like, we went to the pen that you dropped on your phone, and like we looked around for 30, 45 minutes, and this dog's nowhere to be found. And I was like, there's no way, because this dog was in really, really sad shape. This dog wasn't going to get very far without medical attention. I'm like, we don't know what to tell you, man. And so I started, you know, I was done with my meeting. I started in my dress clothes, like scouring bushes and trees and forests and whatever around the school. I think I even got in like a ditch, and the school principal came out. She's like, what are you doing? And I said, I'm looking for this dog. And she was like, you idiot. That dog is our drunk dog. I was like, what are you talking about? I said, this dog had looked like he'd gotten hit by a car. And she goes, he's here just about every day. There's a guy that lives in the woods that feeds him or gives him vodka to drink. And he just gets drunk every afternoon and keels over on the side of the school. He was not hit by a car. So I felt like an idiot. But that's another dog story. From my clinical work. I have a dog story teaching too. And I was going to do another episode on like fluids, bodily fluids. This is sort of a crossover between bodily fluids and animals. But I'm a sucker for sometimes students will sneak dogs into class, like puppies, not usually big dogs unless they're service dogs. And I had this student that had a little puppy and she was like, I couldn't leave him at home, but I had a presentation to give in your class today. We were giving presentations. And I get really bad anxiety when I'm presenting. Is there any way that I could have this puppy up here? And I was like, I'm going to act like I didn't see the puppy. I'm not going to tell administration. You know, it's a harmless, cute little dog. And I'm a dog person. You found my soft spot. Sure. You can have the puppy up here just for today. She was like, okay, well, while I'm giving the presentation, would you mind holding the puppy? And so she got up to give the presentation. It was a PowerPoint presentation. And I'm sitting down in my chair, you know, with my notepad, taking notes on this presentation, doing some evaluation, and petting this puppy. And this puppy throws up all over the crotch of my pants. And this was the first class I was teaching that day. And I had like three or four other classes to teach. I said, oh my goodness, it's going to look like I peed myself. And the student was mortified. She was like, please don't fail me for the presentation. I'm so sorry this dog just threw up on you. And I was like, there's no way I would ever be retaliatory like that. I was like, it's okay. It's cool. And I went on and taught my next three classes with this wet spot stain on my crotch from a dog throwing up on it. So another dog story. I'm sure I've got other dog stories, but I can't think of any right now. I know I have some gecko stories. I think I have 3 or 4 gecko stories. Surprisingly, living in Memphis, geckos aren't like native to Memphis, so that's crazy. But the first one comes by way of Hawaii. So I did my my clinical internship, sort of like my residency in Hawaii on the island of Kauai. And I think I've mentioned this in other episodes before. It was beautiful. It was tropical. I would paddleboard. I would snorkel after work. I would, you know, fish for tropical fish that we never had here in Memphis. Spent a lot of beach time. It was beautiful. It was an awesome experience. But being Hawaii, we had geckos, and sometimes geckos would get inside of buildings and you'd see geckos climbing up on walls, whatever. It wasn't abnormal to have a gecko inside a house or inside of a classroom. And I was printing off a psychological report. So again, printing off a report, and I was printing it off right before the meeting. So I was going to take this report sort of from the printer to the meeting and present results to this child and this child's family. And anyways, the printers go in, and all of a sudden I hear this like splat. I guess you can't hear a splat noise, but it was like splat, clunk. It was like this juicy sound. I'm like, oh my goodness. And the printer started making even more noises. It didn't sound right. So I went to get this report out, and I noticed there was like a blob on the report. So I opened up the printer. One thing they don't tell you about being a psychologist, and it's probably like this in other office jobs, but you have to be like part-time technology repair person. There's so many copy machines and computers and everything I've had to sort of repair over the years. So I opened up the printer to sort of repair it. There was a gecko that had gotten smushed in the little wheels of the printer. So that splat sound was like the gecko, I guess, bursting open. It was gross. And it was all over like the report. And so I'm like, I'm going to shred this report. I'm going to, you know, clean the printer. I'm going to print out another report to bring this meeting, because I can't bring this like dead gecko juice report to the meeting. So anyways, I print off this next report, and I'll be damned if there wasn't a stain of a gecko still sort of on that report. And for the rest of that year, or for weeks afterwards, it seems like everything I printed off of that printer, there was still like a little smudge or a little stain of a gecko on it. And that became sort of, I guess, my watermark. Instead of having like an official Colby Taylor watermark, it was a gecko outline. So that was kind of gross. I've had other gecko experiences. So I know that some of our listeners are in graduate school. And a lot of times in North America, if you're in graduate school, you carry on a graduate assistantship, sort of like a little job, usually 10 or 20 hours a week at a university, where you do a little bit of work, teaching, research, whatever, and your tuition gets paid for, and you might get a little bit of a stipend. And one year that I was in graduate school, my GA, my graduate assistantship, was working for this old school psychologist. I'm not going to mention his name, but he's a legend sort of in the field of psychology, and in school psychology in particular. And he had all of these, basically I would sit in this room, and he had all of these old psychological assessments and all of these old psychological journals. And it was really sort of dusty. And I would sit there in case anybody ever wanted to come and check out one of like check out to look at, or check out to like take home for a little bit, like sign out one of these old psychological assessments or old psychological journals. So I was sort of like a librarian, I guess, in a way. And nobody ever wanted to come check the stuff out. So it was basically sort of me sitting there and occasionally archiving things. But because it was some really old stuff, like stuff that was like 80 or 100 years old, there's a lot of dust. You know, this is probably where my allergies got really bad. Occasionally we'd see cockroaches, other critters. But I had some geckos that ran out over my legs when I was, doing that assistantship once. So more gecko experience, which aren't native to Tennessee. They're not native to Memphis. So these are Mediterranean house geckos, which are invasive sort of, but they're not really going to hurt the ecosystem. And they've somehow made it to Memphis and other places in North America. It's interesting, there's an established community of Mediterranean house geckos in Tennessee around universities. I read this scientific paper that it seems like universities in particular have these populations of Mediterranean house geckos. And in my clinical work at UT, I was working with a family and I had a little one run out. They're tiny. They're like smaller than your thumb. I had one run out and I picked him up. I took a picture of him, put him on Instagram, put him on the gram. When they get really scared, sometimes they drop their tails. And I let him go back into the building. I figured maybe he would eat some pests and some bugs, and I didn't really want to like take him away from his home. So another gecko story. See, I'm nice to animals. I don't like to kill animals. I might have mentioned this in another episode, maybe on conduct disorder or any social personality disorder. I've worked with a lot of people that have issues with cruelty to animals. I don't know that I'm going to get into any of the graphic details of my cruelty to animal stories, but shocking, disturbing. It's out there and it can be a sign of conduct disorder or budding antisocial personality disorder. So yeah, cruelty to animals. Speaking of like cruelty to animals, sort of, one thing about being a psychologist in the schools is you often don't have a dedicated office space. You're usually itinerant. So you're traveling around between different schools, and depending on what school you're in, they'll try to put you in sort of whatever space is available. And space is always a premium in the schools. Sort of the motto of school psychologists is that they're guests in the house of education. So they're essentially sort of outsiders, guests in the house of education. So most of the time, psychologists are sort of put in broom closets. I've tested in my fair share of broom closets and seen kids in my fair share of broom closets. And that's where I was for this next story. So I showed up to this broom closet to work with a kid. I think the kid was 4 or 5 years old. So young kid, really cute kid. And they start like sort of exploring this broom closet. You know, they'll look at things and sometimes there's like cleaning chemicals and stuff in the broom closets, which in itself seems super, super unsafe for me and for the kids, right? And he was like, "What's this?" And I was like, what is it?" And he opens up his hand and he shows me a mouse trap that hasn't been triggered yet. And I'm like, "Oh my goodness." I was like, we're going to set this down gently. That could take your finger off. I just kept thinking about how like I'm going to end up on the news being sued. And I had nothing to do with this. I had no idea there was a mouse trap here. This is just where sort of the administration put me in that thing. I was like, "Oh my goodness." And so, he gently put it down. Luckily, it didn't go off on his finger. And I used a pencil to trip it and disarm it. And then I went and I had some words with the school custodian and the administration, everything about how unsafe that was. Another time, so they did away with it. They were like, "There'll be no more mouse traps in your little broom closet." They called it my little office space, but it was a broom closet. There'll be no more mouse traps in there. So a couple weeks later, I'm not having to worry about the mouse trap situation. I'm working with a kid. And I hear this noise above me, and there were ceiling tiles sort of above me. And I was like, I have no idea what that noise is. It's kind of weird. It sounds sort of like a squirrel, like a scampering noise. And then all of a sudden, like the ceiling tile caves in, and this nest of mice or rats. I don't know if they're mice or rats, but it falls down to the floor. Like between me and the kid that I'm working with, and these little mice scamper out, or rats. I have no idea what it was, but it was super surprising, gross. I don't know. The kid thought it was really cool. They're like, "Oh, cool, mice everywhere." But that's probably what I get for getting onto them for taking away the mouse traps in that school. So yeah, a couple of mice stories, mouse stories, rat stories. I've had my fair run-in with cockroaches. In Kauai, we had some really juicy cockroaches. We're talking, I consider a big cockroach like anything bigger than thumb size. We had some there that were bigger than thumb size. I was working last week and I heard this scream. It was like 7:30, 7:45 in the morning. So it was pretty early. We didn't have patients that were up on the floor yet. I heard this scream and I thought maybe we were under attack or something. And so I went next door to my colleague's office and it turns out it was a cockroach. It was a giant cockroach. So continuing with my, animal critter encounter stuff, not everything was my internship year or whatever. I continue to have animal encounters. I had one last year when I was teaching. I was teaching and I reach back to the whiteboard because occasionally I like to draw on the board and I'm a terrible drawer. My students will tell me I'm so bad at drawing on the board, but it's something I sort of enjoy doing when I get a dry erase marker that works. It's also comical how often I'll pick up a dry erase marker and it won't work at all. But anyways, I went to pick up a dry erase marker and a spider started crawling on my hand. And because I'm a huge nerd, I knew immediately that it was a brown recluse. I was like, oh, this is so cool. It's a brown recluse spider. And I started showing my students. I was like, look at my hand. It's a brown recluse. Brown recluse spiders are one of the two venomous spiders that we have in Tennessee, the other being the black widow, at least medically significant venomous spiders. And it's sort of debatable how medically significant brown recluses are. We think that most bites of brown recluses that involve like tissue necrosis, tissue death, are actually caused by like staph infections, MRSA, and are misidentified as being brown recluse bites. It's even debatable whether brown recluses can actually bite. But I was like, whoa, this is a brown recluse. My students were like, get that thing away from me. And I thought it was so cool. One sort of nerdy, weird thing about me, we have a lot of brown recluses in our house. And again, I don't like to kill animals. So what I'll do is I'll take them, and I'm actually picking up my jar of brown recluses right now. You might hear it. And I put them in a jar on my desk and I shut the jar and I'll put the brown recluses in there. So I took my brown recluse home and added him to the collection. So that was the other nerdy thing I said was like the Latin name, the binomial nomenclature is Loxosicles reclusa. And I get really into like identifying animals. I don't know if I mentioned this on another episode, but I'm part of a snake identification group. So I sort of took exposure therapy to the extreme. I don't really like snakes, but I figured that I'm outdoors a lot. I fish a lot. I encounter snakes all the time. And knowledge is power. So if I join a Facebook group of, you know, snakes, that's sort of in vitro exposure. And maybe the more I learn about them, the less anxious I'll get. And so I've learned all of their Latin nomenclature. I've learned their Latin names, and I'll even like help identify snakes. It seems like, my friends, my colleagues, if they ever encounter a snake, I'm like the first person they'll text and I'll tell them exactly what the snake is pretty quickly. My dad was actually texting me this morning with an ID question, with an identification question. So I've become that person. All right, insects, brown recluses, cockroaches. I taught in a classroom last semester where we had a wasp nest somewhere, and I could never find the wasp nest. There are paper wasps, which aren't particularly aggressive, but still sort of disconcerting to be teaching and have, you know, a couple of wasps land on you. Obviously, if you had some sort of allergy and had to worry about anaphylaxis, that's not a good thing. So I'd be teaching and I'd have a wasp land on me, and I kind of shrug it off because I don't think I'm allergic to wasps. I've been stung twice and I've never had a bad reaction. But anyways, one of my students decided to take care of the problem. So this wasp was flying around and she was a super like quiet student, really docile, sweet. And all of a sudden, sort of like a Karate Kid move, she reached up and she grabbed the wasp out of midair and crunched it in her hand. A wasp that could have stung her in her hand. It was just like one of the most badass things that I've ever seen. We ended up getting rid of the wasp problem in that classroom. More animal stories. So one cool thing about Kauai, there's a lot of cool things about Kauai, but Kauai is known for having wild chickens running around the island. A lot of other Hawaiian islands have mongooses or mongoose. I don't know what the plural of mongooses is, that would eat wild chickens, but Kauai is one of the few Hawaiian islands that does not have a mongoose problem. And so Kauai has a thriving wild chicken population. And one of sort of the symbols, emblems of Kauai is the chicken or rooster. And when I would be doing clinical work in Kauai, I was actually in a trailer, but it was a nice trailer. It was an air-conditioned trailer. But it was a trailer that was on a school campus. And you could get up sort of like underneath the trailer, and we'd have chickens that would nest and live under there all the time, and they'd always be having baby chicks, and the baby chicks would, you know, would come out following the mama chick, and there's chickens everywhere, which leads to, well, again, I'm not going to talk about cruelty to animals, but I do have some cruelty to animal stories involving the baby chicks. But lots of chicken encounters. So you will encounter animals in your clinical work. All this to say, I'm going to try to keep track of, I was like, I can do episodes just on like little topics like animals or like bodily fluids. I could do a bodily fluid episode and probably take up 30 minutes with my experiences in that and clinical stuff. But anyways, this is my episode on animals. If you have episode requests, you can send them with the subject line mailbag to ctaylo41@cbu.edu. And we do have a couple of mailbag emails. The first one is from Australia, where there's lots of dangerous critters, right? It seems like everything in Australia can hurt you, which I'd love to visit Australia sometime. Flying to Hawaii, you were only like halfway to Australia, and the flight always seems so long. I was like, I can't imagine going on to Australia, how far it would be. But I'd love to go to Australia at some point. And actually, one of my one of the interns that I worked with, her husband is from Australia. And he was a super funny, super cool guy. I'll tell you what, Australians know how to party. Like my three or four Aussie friends that I've had over the years, they are all partiers. So Australians know how to party. But this is hello from Australia. A big thank you for your podcast, Abnormal Psych. Helped me pass mental health conditions, third year psych class at University of Sydney. Keep doing what you're doing. Thank you. I appreciate that email. I notice on my stats, I can see like how often episodes have been listened to and sort of location information. It seems like I have a bunch of listeners in Australia, which is super cool. Again, maybe sometimes I'll be able to go visit Australia. Another mailbag email. First of all, you need to go on less vacations and post more content because I'm all caught up and I have nothing else to hyperfixate on aside from psychology. That's awesome. I don't think I have another vacation plan, so I think you're all good on that. School's approaching too quickly. I appreciate all the knowledge you're giving out for free. And yeah, this is absolutely free. I make no money on this. It's sort of my labor of love. My wife thinks it's stupid. She's like, why don't you make some money off of it if you have that many listeners? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know how to make money. Psychologists aren't good at making money, which is a topic for another episode. I've been thinking about writing an email for a while, but I didn't because I hadn't gotten to the end of your podcast and didn't want to ask you something you might have already answered. But I finally wanted to email after I realized your wife and I share the same birthday, July 13th. So happy late birthday. This is coming from Ellie. That was 2 weeks ago today. So I'm trying to do better about publishing an episode every 2 weeks. So same birthday as my wife. I love that. I love hearing about your family and how you have a great relationship. My request is about insomnia. My brain always wants to detangle every trauma, stress, and random thought late at night. Sometimes I don't mind it because I like giving myself therapy and I think it's good to decompress, get to know my fears up close. But am I doing more harm than good entertaining myself with all my thoughts, or am I better off turning off my brain? My fiance is able to fall asleep to the TV and that helps him not get caught up in his thoughts, but that doesn't really work for Ellie. How do you turn off your brain? Any tips or suggestions? So I can do an episode on insomnia and on cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. It does sound like you might be ruminating a little bit, but I'll go ahead and sort of spoil this episode. There's no real way to turn off your brain. And in fact, sort of fighting those feelings and trying to turn off your brain, sort of thought stopping, might be counterproductive. Insomnia is something a lot of people suffer from, and I think that would definitely make a good topic. I did one on sleep, but I think focusing on insomnia and interventions for insomnia would make for a worthwhile episode. And I think I'm out of time and out of energy for this episode. I'm going to go downstairs and spend some time with my own critters. We actually got two fish this morning, so I'm doing daddy daycare today, and we have an aquarium. And my kids were like, hey, can we go to the pet store? Can we get a couple fish to add to the aquarium? I was like, yeah, cool. That'll be fun. So we went to the aquarium and they only had like four fish in the whole store. There were those glow in the dark fish, the glow fish, which I've never gotten before because we don't have a black light in our aquarium. And they're usually more expensive than the non-glow in the dark, non-mutant fish. I was like, okay, you know, my kids really wanted a fish. I gave in. I got the fish. They were actually 80% off, which is great. But I'm going to have to watch the aquarium really closely. Because when they were selling me the fish, they're like, these fish don't look so great. So if they die in the next 30 days, you have a warranty. So yeah, I'm going to go down and check on my fish. Until the next episode, send me mailbag requests. Take care. Stay well.